What's going on, everyone? Welcome back to the Extreme Drummers Podcast, episode 5. Can't believe we're already on episode 5. I guess time flies when you're having fun. Yeah, as always, massive thanks to everybody who's still listening and to everybody who's sent me messages and stuff telling me how much you're enjoying it and how much you're relating to it, which is really cool. I think, you know, all the stuff we talk about is, you know, is relatively universal. I think all drummers and musicians have been through these kinds of situations on one level or another. So I think it's quite cool, you know, to hear everybody's stories and all that stuff. So yeah, again, just massive thanks to everybody. It's really cool that people are responding and people are into it, because as I've said before, it's great fun for me. Keeps my mind busy, and it's just wicked to talk to great drummers and friends and really cool people, and I'm just so glad that everybody is into it. So yeah, thank you. Massive thanks. Means a lot. But yeah, episode 5. Again, can't believe we're on episode 5. That's crazy. Dan Presland is this week. Dan plays for Ne Obliviscaris, which is a tongue twister. It's also known as Neo for short, as we discuss in this episode. Plays for Vipassi and A Million Dead Birds Laughing. Dan is an incredible drummer. Yeah, if you don't know who he is, immediately YouTube him or check out any of those bands and you'll see exactly what I mean. Super creative. Just killer drummer. Great drummer. Yeah, he also runs his own studio, built his own studio called Bushido Studios. Check that out as well, in Melbourne, Australia. And just really, really, really cool dude. Me and Dan have never actually met. We've been chatting for a while on social media and stuff, and we were going to meet last year. Just before all this COVID stuff kicked off, Carcass was meant to go to Australia and we were going to meet up and, you know, finally meet each other and have a party and all kinds of stuff, but that never happened, obviously, and we discussed that. But yeah, it's just a really cool chat. Dan's a really awesome, down-to-earth guy. And we just get into it, talk about all kinds of cool stuff, tour stories, telling us how, you know, it talks a lot about how he built a studio, and the writing process, creating process, all that kind of stuff. It's a really, really cool chat. And he's a really, really cool dude, great drummer. Oh, I almost forgot to mention, Zoom Crack, because I do pretty much all of these podcasts through Zoom. Zoom crashed partway through this episode. So there was like 20 minutes where I was trying to get my Zoom back up and running and all kinds of stuff. So that was funny. But I've edited out the whole thing. So, fun little challenge. If anyone can figure out where it is, where I edited it, and then send me a message, I don't know. I'll give you some kind of reward. But yeah, so see if you can figure it out. I spent a lot of time editing it together so you couldn't tell, but see if you can tell. Anyway, as always, check out and keep updated on the normal places. So that is Instagram, Extreme Drummers Podcast, or Dan Wilding Drum, Facebook, Dan Wilding Drum, ExtremeDrummersPodcast.com, or on YouTube, just search Extreme Drummers Podcast. And if you want more information about Dan, I'll be putting some stuff in the show notes. And yeah, so I really hope you enjoy this one. It's a really cool, funny chat. We laughed a lot, so I hope you laugh as well. And yeah, thanks so much, everybody. And enjoy it, and see you next time. Cheers. But how are you, man? How's things?
Yeah, good. Yeah, good. Yeah. I've just recently come off a break. Took a break from everything for like a month, and I'm back into it now. So,
okay. Was that a kind of conscious effort? Did you feel like you were needed a break?
well cooked. I really learned my limits.
Oh, so shit,
just building the studio and doing records, and just I cooked myself.
I was gonna say, because so, I mean, you know, like most people, as we've had on the podcast as well, I've had on the podcast, there's no one but me, just me. But I'm making it sound like it's Joe Rogan or something with a team, but it's
yeah,
just
totally. The crew behind you.
Exactly.
You just got a light behind you.
Bring that up, Jamie. Yeah, exactly. like most people, including the ones that I've had on the podcast, have had a break, but you didn't really have a break, right? You went like fuck it, I'm going to build a studio. Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, pretty much.
I mean, you had you already had something though, right? You already had like a kind of a,
I did,
a,
yeah.
a studio
I
beforehand.
Had, yeah, I sort of like, you know, just building it up over the years. And I had a, like in the house plan that I built, the room's called a fear room. Okay. So it's like a bit bigger than a bedroom. Actually, quite a bit bigger than a bedroom. It's meant to be like a, to have like a theater screen or something and a chair and, you know.
Yeah.
So I just turned that into my drum room. And then I had a computer in there too. So I just started tracking in there and yeah, just one thing led to another. And now I've got like this full blown setup in my house. So,
is the one you had before, that's the one that I guess most people will know from the YouTube videos and a lot of the stuff that you do on social media.
Yeah.
Because the new one, is that more for your kind of what I assume is a new business, the Bushido Studios thing, or are you gonna be doing a lot more videos and stuff now that you've had your time off?
Well, a bit of both, really. The old room I had my drums in is now my control room. So I've got my console in there and all my pre's and a couple of computers and stuff like that. And I turned my garage, like my big double garage, into the live room.
Wow.
Yeah.
So it's a proper drum space, basically.
Yeah, it's proper, man.
That's sick.
I've got, I had professional guys come and design it and kit out all the audio treatment and stuff. And pretty much spent my life savings on it. So I hope to God we can get some on this, man. But yeah,
that's it.
Cool.
And
I love
Did you do quite a bit of it yourself as well?
Yes, I did. I was originally looking at hiring people, and obviously being a musician, everything, it's like, got to do it on the cheap, you know, but it's got to be sick, and that's just not possible. That's not possible. So I just started relying on like tradesmen to come and build, and some of them just wouldn't turn up, or they're just shit.
Oh my God.
And so I literally went out and spent like 3,000 quid on tools and
fucking hell, just YouTube's, before you even started.
Yeah, pretty much.
Wow.
And just YouTubed everything, researched everything. And I roped some mates in to help me out with a bunch of stuff, and they were like really helpful and all that. But I did a lot of it myself just because I couldn't rely on people. And I have like OCD, so things need to be a certain way for me to, for my brain to be at ease. And if I rely on other people, I'm just let down all the time, like in that sense. So
when you're paying people though as well, it's kind of like, you know,
you expect a
certain level, don't you? So it's like, and especially something
so
that
mad.
When you're spending, as you said, spending your life savings on something, and it's so close to your heart, it's not just, you know, it's not just something that you're doing kind of, you know, because you've got a bit of spare money or whatever. This is like your life, essentially.
No, that's right. Yeah. Yeah. And I was just like, oh, I was getting so mad sometimes. Like, just a dude wouldn't turn up, or he'd be like, oh, hey, man, I double booked a job and I can't be there till next week. And it's like,
oh, God.
It's another 5 days without me playing drums. Like, what the fuck? Like, I need this done, man. Like, fuck.
And none of this is quick. It's not like a fucking painting a room or something, is it? So it's going to take weeks.
It's a massive, drawn-out process. Like, when I first scoped it up, I thought, all right, sweet, this is going to be done in 3 or 4 weeks. It took 5 months. And it was just, like, way over my head, man. Way over my head. But I learned so much, so much. So it was
Did you have
good
any
process.
Experience beforehand of doing that kind of shit, like building in general, or you know,
not really, no,
or anything.
No, wow. No, maybe like patching up a hole in the wall from something.
Yeah,
that's about as
putting
as
up
experience.
A picture or something.
Yeah, putting up a TV on the wall. That's about it.
Fucking hell, man! Because I remember you sending me some pictures, like some updates and stuff, and I just assumed you were like some, you know, you became a kind of drumming sensation. You were some kind of like builder. Extraordinaire.
Handyman, handyman.
That's what I thought, because it's like, I mean, from the outside, it looks so well done.
Yeah, right. Well, geez, yeah. I mean, I was like spending 16 hours a day on this thing. And because I'm just so compulsive with things, when I get like, when just something enters my brain and I want to do it, it's like, I can't do anything else. For better or worse, that may be, but that's just how I operate.
Yeah.
And I just sort of really went hard on it, and 5 months later it was finally done. So
fuck, But now, I mean, yeah. it's actually a house, right? It's all a home.
Yeah, it's in my house. Yeah.
Wow. Yep. So you can just fucking walk into the garage.
Dude,
just...
it's the ultimate, man. Like, it's really is. I'm super, super blessed to have it. And it's just so cool to just be able to have quite a soundproof place to play a full live kit. Mm. You know, like listening to like Alan and Adrian's cast you did with them, I'm like, fuck, I'm so lucky. Like, those guys talk about having, you know, a live kit, or even yourself, man, like, you know, playing on EQ a lot because of your neighbors and stuff. Like,
holy shit.
I used to have that problem too, but it's just, I really feel really blessed to have that ability, because I know it's like a drummer's ultimate dream, you know, because guitarists can just sit there and noodle all day, man. Like,
I know. And even with a, like, even if they want to play a real amp, they can just kind of turn it down. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
They can still get that feeling of a real amp. It doesn't have to be a plug-in or whatever. But for us, like, fucking hell, you have to either invest, as you've done, loads of time, loads of money, or you have to buy an electronic kit, which obviously is a lot of money. And they're great, but they're not an acoustic kit.
yeah, that's right. It is way different. It was cool to hear like how you guys were discussing on the last podcast how the Roland stuff's getting better, and there's all these little upgrades as the models go up, and it seems like they're coming a long way, because I used to have a Roland, but it's like a TD-3 or 5 or some shit, like,
wow,
you know, 12 years ago or something. Yeah. And it was just these pads that people would normally use for that, the bass drop on the side of their kit, you know, pads all around the kit.
Yeah,
it's just like,
exactly.
So yeah, come a long way.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I had one, when was it? I can't even think how old I am now, but I would have had one when I was a teenager, because ever since I was a teenager, obviously I've had this issue, and the UK doesn't have any space. As I'm sure you know.
Nah, dude, it's shot. It's way shot.
It's fucking the tiniest little island with...
Yeah, yeah.
We've probably got, twice the amount of people that Australia has, maybe more?
Yeah, three times.
Yeah, and Australia's the size of fucking Russia or something.
Yeah, it's massive, man. Yeah. It's massive.
So
yeah.
We are obviously unbelievably packed in. And so you never have space, like, there's rare... Unless you're a millionaire where you can buy a, you know, like a fucking house in the middle of nowhere with, you know...
Yeah.
Land and whatever. So I've always had the issue of, you know, neighbors. So I had an electronic kit when I was a teenager, and it was some Yamaha thing, and it was like it was a really good one, quote unquote, for the time. And looking back at it now, it was fucking so bad, you know, with like those triangle cymbals and
Jesus Christ,
and like you couldn't choke the cymbals, like every drum was like single zone, so you could only get one sound on each, and like the velocities. And that, I mean, that was 15 years ago, which, you know, in my head doesn't seem like that long ago, but it is. It's a long
in
fucking
terms
time
of technology,
man.
There's lots happened in that time. Yeah,
exactly.
It really has.
I mean, look at us. We're chatting literally from the
other
side,
like,
of the world.
Real time, almost. You know, I've got my cup of tea and. Like...
I know. Oh yeah, I've just finished mine, but. This is without a doubt the craziest time zone shift I've ever had to deal with.
Australia's it's miles away from everywhere. Like, I think the US is a whole other ball game for us as well. But it's like at least for like even London to New York's not that bad. But
it's 5 hours, I think. 5 hours, 5 or 6 hour time change. Yeah, exactly.
Mm. But it's like we're the other side of the world.
Do you feel as a country? Generally, do you feel like you're miles away from everywhere, or do you feel a bit more connected? Oh, you do.
Yeah, I've done the flight so many times. I know how far it is, man. Holy shit! Yeah,
I mean, it is. I mean, like going to Australia is for me and Bill, our guitar player. It's especially it's one of our favorite places to go because we've got a lot of friends there, and it's just an incredible place. Absolutely love it.
Tight.
And but you know, building up to the flight. Is the worst.
Oh, it's just like, man, pop a Valium and just hope for the best.
Exactly.
It's just brutal. It's so brutal.
It really is.
Especially when the promoter books your flight.
Oh, man.
You get that extra step you got to do or something, you know, like get the baggage again.
You go to like, you know, Dubai and then Kuala Lumpur and then Singapore and then back down.
Oh, like, yeah, dude, this is so shot. Yeah.
It's like 42 hours or something before you...
Yeah. We've done a 44-hour transit once from Melbourne to Portugal. We did. Is Resurrection Fest in Portugal or Spain?
Yeah,
I can't remember.
Yeah, Portugal.
Portugal. Okay.
No.
Yeah, we did. It was.
Oh, wait. Maybe it's Spain. So, sorry if to anyone in Spain or Portugal if we've offended you, but
major offense.
Yeah, it might be Spain actually. Yeah, it might be Spain. Anyway, I should remember that, shouldn't I? Yeah.
Yeah, it took 44 hours to get from Melbourne to there because the promoter, yeah, great guy, I'm sure, but he booked our flights and
saved
himself
most,
a couple of dollars. But
I was going to say, maybe
the
not the most frivolous, yeah.
Oh, that was the first show of, you know, like a 5 or 6 week run.
Wow.
And so land off the plane, haven't slept for two days.
Yeah.
Play a show and then... Straight
so
into
you didn't have an off day or anything. You just straight there, pretty much.
Fuck no, yeah. Fuck off down to the plane, hell, straight there, dude. On a shuttle. And if you've played there before, it's like a 2 hour shuttle from the airport to the
It's middle of nowhere. Yeah. It's lovely. It's a lovely place. Yeah. But yeah,
oh, it's fantastic. Yeah,
but not and when you haven't slept in 3 days.
Oh, I was so shot, So yeah, that was brutal. Really brutal. Yeah,
and that's kind of unfortunately, I guess you can't just you have to book a whole bunch of stuff at one time, right? You can't just be like, right, let's just pop over and do Wacken and then come back
just
home.
Nip over for a quick, you know, 40-minute set and nip home. Yeah, there's none of that.
No. It's going to have to be at least a couple of weeks. I get, you know, that's the same, I guess, when we come down to your neck of the woods. But, you know, we usually try and fit in Japan or some kind of Southeast Asia thing and then New Zealand if we can. So, you know, I guess it's a bit harder for you guys because I guess generally... is it fair to say more stuff happens, I guess, on this side of the planet generally?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah.
But I mean, it seems like Australia's got a fucking really good scene, especially for extreme metal. Like,
yeah, it does pretty, I think it does pretty well in terms of population density.
Mm.
Like, we've only got 25, 24 million here. But like, for example, we play club shows in Melbourne and get like 1,000 people in Melbourne, which is
amazing.
Great for us. Yeah. And, you know, Sydney's like 700 or so. And Brisbane's a little bit smaller. It's like 400, 500.
Yeah.
But the venues are always doing pretty well pre-virus, of course. And it's pretty difficult at the moment. Now it's like bands are playing shows where they have to do, say, 2 shows in a day because of the reduced capacities and stuff like that.
Wow.
And it's just like, it's just brutal. Like, if you're headlining, man, like we play 93, 94 minute set. Can you imagine playing that twice in a day? Oh,
yeah.
Just,
wow.
The vocals would be shot.
You play long set, but I guess your songs are long, right?
Yeah dude. It's like, I friggin' don't stop, man. Like, the whole time. It's nuts. It's really nuts.
No, I guess you don't seem to make it easy on yourself, though, either.
No. It's just been, hit the go button and don't stop. It's kind of...
Is
that's
that
just kind of how it evolved.
Is that all you? Like, are you the drum guy in the band, or is there? I mean, I'm always intrigued by these kind of like the writing situations in each band. Do you push yourself to those kind of, you know, those? A, you've got the really fucking crazy endurance stuff going on, especially with your feet. Your feet just never stop.
And then,
and then you've also got the you know, like the kind of multi-limbed independence stuff.
Yeah,
that you do
right.
As well.
Yeah,
and then obviously you've just got the blast beats and the rest of the shit as well. Like,
yeah, just the old blast beats.
Yes, you know, casual 220, 240. Just
yeah,
for like
just
5 minutes.
Throw them in there. Yep.
Are you pushing yourself for those for all those bits, or are they kind of are they bestowed upon you in some ways?
Yeah, that sort of happened years ago when I. Because Neo's like the first band I ever joined. So
yeah,
I've been in there since like, I was only playing drums for like 12, 18 months when I joined the band. So I was like, so shit. And I don't know why they asked me to come back for another rehearsal. But anyway, they did. But one of the earlier tracks we wrote, it's called Forget Not. It's got this really long passage. It's about 4 minutes, 45 of like 200. Yeah. And we started jamming it, and like the guys are trying to figure out riffs and who's going to go here and who's going to go there. And I'm just like, kept playing, and I'm like, fucking, can we finish? Like, I'm fucked. Like, this is ridiculous. And then they're like, oh, wait, can we just like do double bass that whole time? And I'm like, no, that's like stupid as hell. Like, not happening.
No
anyway,
one's
fast
wanna
forward.
Listen to that.
No, fast forward a couple of years, and then all of a sudden, every song is just full of double bass. And
I was going to say, so you kind of inadvertently made a thing for the band and yourself without even trying.
Pretty much. It just sort of happened that way. And then the songs are just along, and it just became, it sort of became conscious after a while. It just sort of became like this underlying intensity under the music, but it's just like this underlying, I don't know, this, yeah, this extremity under the music with kind of the guys are just strumming along and nice and cruising. I'm like hauling ass the whole time, you know. So it's this weird combination.
Well, that's the, I mean, you know, it's hard to find, I genuinely think it's hard to find unique shit, especially in extreme metal. Like, no, again, no offense to extreme metal, but
yeah, you might be hitting some days, people here.
Yeah, I was going to say, sorry, everyone, love you. But but there's, you know, there's a lot of the time, there's kind of a box, isn't there, that kind of, I think definitely. People almost feel like they need to fit into that to...
100%, 100%. There's so much pressure to, and because you feel like if you don't, like maybe it won't sell or you won't get a tour or you won't get noticed or something, you know?
Yeah.
Absolutely. But I think it's the opposite. The more you're yourself and you stick to being yourself and have, you know, I guess confidence in that, I think the more that's attractive.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, I always struggle pronouncing the second word. Ne obliviscaris, right? That's how you say it.
Yeah, that's on the money, yeah. Okay, yeah. Neo for short.
Neo, okay, good. I'll refer to it for the rest of the thing as Neo, just for my own sake, so I don't embarrass myself. But like when I first heard, because I first found out about you before I found out about the band through some kind of YouTube video. Like it was about four or five years ago maybe. But just some like, you know, suggested YouTube video.
Oh yeah.
And I was like, fucking hell, this guy rips. And again, you know, the double bass drum was going for like 5 minutes. I was like, fucking hell, this is insane.
Yeah.
And then obviously I discovered Neo and I just thought, I've never heard anything like this especially in extreme metal. You know, and expect like the drums really add to that uniqueness, I think, because there's so much kind of there's a lot of kind of traditional kind of black metal-y stuff in there, isn't there? You know, as you said, like the strumming-y chords and stuff.
Yeah, there is. Yeah.
But the way the kind of, especially, you know, like the violin and stuff and your drums go over the top of it, it makes that whole, it makes even the more quote-unquote traditional riff sound more unique. And then you've got all the other, you know, like acoustic bits and then like the kind of instrumental bits. And I was like, fucking hell, like this is genuinely unique in a genre where it's really hard to be unique. And as you said, it's kind of, is it that hard to be unique or are people scared? I think that's the question, I think.
Yeah. I think that's a very good way to put it, actually. I think probably people are probably scared in a way, you know. I think that's why a lot of people heavily edit like guitar players on Instagram or even the drummers who put up all the crazy 300 BPM, but it's like, dude, you programmed that.
Yeah.
And if I put
it
in slow motion, I can't see your feet matching your strokes. Yeah, like, what are you doing?
Exactly.
Why are you doing that?
Exactly. Or pretending you don't use triggers or anything, or it's not sound replaced.
Come on,
dude.
It's like, God, man, I've been doing this too long, man. Come on. You're not fooling us.
Yeah, exactly. But is that always, since, obviously, I guess the band were they relatively new when you joined?
Yes. Yeah. They had no releases.
And that's, has it always been the kind of MO, as it were, to be as kind of unique as possible? Or were you just kind of doing stuff you liked? And hoping for the best.
Yeah, there's a bit of that. We sort of have a mindset going into it of we don't finalize a song till everyone's like happy. So it's kind of like really is a combination of all six people throwing in an idea, whether the idea is just a basic rhythm or just whatever it is, or the idea you wrote most of the song, you know. So we pretty much just write music that we want to hear and just go for it from there. And it's a pretty fun band to play in. It's really fun to play in. There's no like rules or boundaries. There's no like, all right, we're a deathcore band, you know, like or anything like that. It's just like literally whatever goes, and it's quite fun to be a part of something like that.
Yeah, everyone seems to be very good musicians too, which must
help
and also be kind of high pressure.
Oh man, it was like, dude, when I first joined that band, like I was by far and away the most inexperienced guy, and it was quite difficult. I've got to say, it was really difficult.
You must have kind of forced yourself to get up to speed, though, like both figuratively and literally up to speed.
Oh yeah, dude! I just did some crazy, crazy like long term drills over the years back in the days. So just to get able to play the songs, like you know, that took years. To be honest, that took years. yeah, we I only recorded the first album in 2009. And I remember going into the studio to do that first record, and I just wasn't confident. And, you know, the first time really doing a major kind of release it was a pretty good studio too.
Yeah.
And it was just, that just destroyed me, you know, hearing back your takes. And I'm like, suck so much, you know, like I'm suck worse than I thought I sucked, you know.
Yeah, so that just really sent me on a kind of the leveler, isn't it, when you're in the studio?
God. That's the equalizer, man. Just like the humbler, the great humble pie.
Exactly.
So that really sent me on a warpath of like, nah, fuck this. Like, this is what I want to do. And there's, you know, nothing getting in my way sort of thing. So I really just laid down the drills and just went kind of nuts on it and just tried to really hone it. Yeah.
Yeah. Are you still kind of pushing that stuff these days? Like when you practice these days, do you still have that kind of that mindset of like, you know, pushing as far as you can go with your kind of concepts and stuff?
Yeah, definitely. I think so. I just finished up a record that link I sent you the other day.
Yeah, yeah.
I finished up that record a couple of weeks ago, and I probably spent a good 18 months, 2 years, like writing and rehearsing for that record. And then building the studio set me back probably 8 months of doing that. Mm. But that really, really pushed my, I guess, creative boundaries to write for that record. And the first one as well did the same for me back in 2014-15. So
yeah,
very, very tricky. And that band's cool because there's a lot of freedom. Me and a guy in Melbourne, Ben Boyle, pretty much do all the music, and he writes pretty much all of it.
Vipassi or Vipassi?
Yeah, Vipassi, yep.
Yeah, Vipassi, yeah.
Yep. And it's the only band where we can sort of do like literally whatever we want. So neither of us like heavily edited drums, or neither of us like gridded guitars and drums and, you know, locked in syncopated 16th notes to grid. And like, I really don't really like that stuff too much. It doesn't appeal to me too much because I think it just sounds like everyone else. Soulless.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely.
Yeah.
It could be anybody. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. So we sort of love having that freedom. So we're doing a really cool thing at the moment. Ben's tracking guitars there. He's literally has the click off for the most part and just tracks to my transients and the drums. Wow. So it has a really kind of unique vibe to it. And I guess like, especially with you, Ben, in Carcass, you can probably relate to those dudes, like old school, you know, like, oh, fuck that, you know, come on, kick drums and no editing and smash absolutely. It out. So we...
As I was talking about with Adrian, I think that's kind of, again, that's kind of a bit of a missing link in extreme metal. Again, not 100%. To offend anybody. But
oh, you're killing everyone, just, man.
Fuck it. I'm never going to listen to this ever. Sorry,
it's called
dude,
the hate cast.
The extreme drummers hate cast. Just hate everything. Yeah,
just shitting on everyone.
I think it's like, you know, everything has a like a natural plateau. And I think there was a period where that kind of heavily edited, gridded kind of sound was kind of new, and it was a bit like,
yeah, it was
fucking hell,
and it was exciting and crazy, you know, like
absolutely
it was Beneath the Mask and that,
oh yeah dude, fucking hell,
and that came out like, fuck, that was sick. That was so sick.
It was like, what can you do with technology that you can't do with humans, almost?
Yeah,
like, it was more like a technology thing than a human thing. But now it's almost been so overdone, in my opinion, it's been so overdone that I'm kind of missing that kind of, you know, human experience.
Yeah, absolutely. So I really want to go back to that kind of feel and vibe. And, you know, having my own studio as well is just so sick to be able to do that and have no limitations on anything. You know, it's like literally pre-production for a record and then walk in the same room and lay down the same tracks. And, this, you know, like, it's just so comfortable and it's really cool.
Is the Vipassi thing, is that the first thing that you've done of your own stuff in your new studio?
Yes. Yep. Yeah, I've done a few session things in there. I guess a little bit test the waters and refine some things. And then I did two pre-productions for Vipassi. And then we, did the record a couple of weeks ago.
Wow. And when's that? Is that set to come out anytime soon?
It's slated for mixing in May. So,
okay.
So I did, you know, label's like 4 or 5 months, I guess. So probably September or something, October, hopefully.
Hopefully when the world gets back to some kind of whatever normality is.
Yeah. Yeah, whatever that is. I don't even know anymore.
I know. Do you find do you find having the studio and being able to record yourself? I guess it's, you know, it's similar to the V-drum thing that we were talking about with Adrian Allen, but yep. having the kit properly mic'd and, you know, as you said, pre-production, do you find that like a real benefit for writing and stuff? Or is it kind of like, is it more pressure?
Oh, no, because... it's a massive benefit. Massive.
Oh, is it? Okay. Okay.
Yeah. I for me, anyway, I've really changed my workflow in the last couple of years with how I'm writing. Mm. How I go now is I just have a laptop next to me with a Pro Tool session and I just loop riffs. I'll loop riffs for like literally for half an hour to an hour of one riff.
Wow.
And then I'll move on to the next one and then I slowly combine it all and then I'll do a demo and then I see how everything works and figures out and then I'll make changes from there. So I just like my writing's just brutal repetition for the most part. But really, really brutal repetition. So
is that kind of how you come up with, you know, that really, because again, speaking of unique, like those kind of, I don't know how you'd even describe those kind of patterns. I get, you know, the a lot of time they're multi-pedal, right? Like you move around.
Oh, right. Yeah, yeah. Like ostinato stuff.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you. That was the word I was looking for.
yeah.
Is that coming from you just looping something so long that you eventually
much.
Come up with this, something that's not just boom.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much. I just sort of figure out a pattern in my head and then I think, okay, how can I move that sound source? And then how does that interweave between the accents? And then, okay, how do the hands work on top? And okay, cool. Does it work putting it all together? And just like a hit and miss kind of does it work or not situation. Yeah.
Yeah. And then you just kind of keep going until you're relatively happy with something.
Yeah, until I run out of time and I got to record it. Pretty much.
Yeah, well, that's the ultimate thing, isn't it? It's like that's the hardest one is knowing when something's finished. And I know for a fact that the reason, because in hopefully the new Carcass album will be out this year. I mean, we were told that last year, but it didn't.
Fingers
happen,
crossed. So. Oh yeah, exactly. I was told our album would be out last year too. I was
lying
there
to. You go, see. Fucking COVID again, but and. But that was because we had no, what's it called, deadline from the label and no pressure from the label, which is incredibly lucky for a band in our position.
Yeah.
That was a bad thing, in my opinion, because...
I agree.
Do you know what I mean? Like, it's kind
man.
Of... It
People
never gets
that.
And it's, and it's been 8
People
years.
People abuse so. It. Yeah. Yeah. Fucking hell.
We're like tools, do you know what I mean? So, but obviously not quite as talented. But... yeah, so I think do you find that as well, that having having like a not only a time deadline but like a creative creative box where like you've got like certain parameters that you have to stay within. Do you find that easier, or would you rather just have complete free reign?
Yeah, in terms of creative, I'd like the free reign, but I do work well to deadlines. In fact, I work better to deadlines because I can map out a process of, say, okay, let's get the first demos done by this date, second demos done by this date, and give yourself a realistic kind of timeline.
Yeah. It's probably a bit healthier for your brain as well instead of just like throwing yourself into the unknown.
Oh, man, way better. I just operate better on a more... If I know what's going on, you know, if something's planned and it stays to the plan, like that's why touring in Mexico on Mexican time is like really hard.
Oh, dude, yeah, that's just like, what do
oh
they call it?
Oh, my God.
The Mexican watch where you're just like, okay, so pick up
lobby
at one.
Call six.
Yeah. So it's going to be 10 p.m.
Yeah, man. I think it was the last time we were there, the tour manager actually missed her flight. Like, we're in the lobby at 6 and we're like, well, the flight's at 9. We're out of here. Like, what the hell? And then she missed the flight and we're like, we're in Mexico with no TM. Like,
fucking
Jesus.
Yeah, we had a similar thing in Russia, actually. I won't name his name, but our kind of booker, and I guess he was kind of like our chaperone. He just got absolutely fucked one night, like completely wasted. And like, it was... Lobby call was 9, I think, and the flight was at like 11:30, I think, and it was like half an hour to the airport, whatever. And it was like 5 to 9, and he just wasn't there. And then it was like 9:10, he wasn't there.
Oh,
and then
finally,
RTM went and crashed on his door, and he just opened the door just in his underwear, just like, oh. We were like, dude, we got a fucking fly coming. And he, you know, he looked rough as fuck. And we were like, oh my God, this is going to be awful.
That's crazy. How do they have a job?
I know. Nuts. But I mean, he's a legend and he's a really nice guy. And, you know, those things, I guess, you know, those are the kinds of things that keep, you know, they keep things interesting.
Oh, man, they certainly do. They certainly do. Yeah.
They remind you that everybody's human and, you know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Italy's a bit the same, isn't it?
Yeah.
Italy's a bit the same with time. They're like a little bit 2 hours after what they say they are going to be. And
yeah, I think all that sort of stuff. Coming from the cultures and the countries that we come from, it's, I guess, I don't know. It's kind of, it's a big part of our whole thing, isn't it? Like, yeah, have things
the
in
job
on
interviews
time.
At 9, you'll be there
exactly.
at 8:59.
Exactly.
Yeah. 9 o'clock is late.
If it runs late, then you apologize or blah blah blah. You know, that kind
of thing. That's right. Yeah, yeah.
Whereas I think, you know, different countries, different cultures, time's just a little bit more elastic and you just
really
have to
is.
Kind of you have to a kind of what's the word? Adjust your expectations depending on where you are.
Oh, you do. Man, I remember the first time we had to experience the elastic time was just an absolute shock to the system. You know, it was like, wow, this is out of control. So,
yeah. What was the first time you went out of Australia? Because I remember reading a thing, it was relatively recently, about that, which I didn't realize, about the crowdfunding, the Neo crowdfunding.
Oh, yeah.
Thing.
We first toured overseas in, I think, 2012.
Okay.
And the crowdfunding thing. Yeah, I think it was. Might have been 13. And the crowdfunding thing was after our second album. So that was probably 14 or 15.
Okay.
And we did a crowdfunder, like we did some of the rewards. Like we made a couple of EPs, but we made them limited of like super old songs.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was really successful. And it allowed us to do two massive European tours and a whole bunch of other stuff that we wouldn't have been able to do because we were still like, on like a 1:30 PM festival slot at that stage.
Yeah,
so you're not really getting, you know, showered in cash and royalties there. So it's just not possible to fly from Australia, you know, have a mini sleeper van and have all this stuff, you know?
Yeah.
So that was like, that really kickstarted everything for us. It was such a big help.
Yeah. And again, going back to the power of technology that, you know,
yeah, 100%. Yeah, it really was.
You can appeal to your fans kind of directly in a way instead of going through fucking record labels and all that shit.
Absolutely. And we were contracted with Season of Mist. We still are back then. And they were super cool and very, very relaxed in us allowing us to do that because essentially we were kind of releasing music, you know,
true.
While still being in a contract.
Yeah.
And they were just like, EPs, like they're only like 3 or 4 songs each, but it was brand new music, and I think they kind of understood the situation and maybe put a bit of trust in us, and so that was really cool of them, I think.
Well, I guess you know, kind of these days there isn't really a tour support thing from labels because, you know, I guess back in the day they would shell out fucking thousands.
Yeah.
I mean, anyone who doesn't know this, but they'd shell out thousands of pounds to support bands to go on tour and, you know, to get on a big tour or whatever. And these days that just doesn't happen because labels don't. And I mean, maybe it happens at, you know, if you're on, I don't know, Universal or something, you know, one of the big ones, but
We wouldn't know about it.
Yeah, exactly.
We'd have no idea.
None of us have ever experienced that. So, but I guess in metal, especially that doesn't really happen anymore. So,
no.
I mean, you know, Season of Mist could have been arseholes about it, but, I guess they probably understood in the long term this will be good for the band, fingers crossed, and it's basically getting tour support that we can't give them. So
no, that's right. That's right. Yeah. Yeah, that was super cool. And it's actually both my bands, Vapati and Neo, on Season of Mist, and they're just like really cool, no pressure, and very supportive and happy to negotiate on lots of things, and they're really cool.
Oh, that's cool, man. That's cool. It's nice to hear positive label stories.
Yeah, we could go down the other path, but we'll leave that one.
Yeah, I was gonna say that's a whole other podcast, maybe.
Save that for your hate cast.
Which this is 50% hate cast, this one.
Yeah, okay. We'll turn it down a notch.
Bring back to positive. But what's what's a day in the life at the moment? Because I'm assuming is it different to how it was over a year ago? Like wildly different.
Yeah, it is.
Okay.
Now that I've got the studio, I'm really putting a lot of time into to build the business up. And actually, we'll roll that back a bit. 12 months originally, before I built the studio, I was actually going to open a restaurant.
Wow!
And this is like 4 months, 5 months before COVID.
Yeah.
And you know, I'd been working hard and putting my money away, and I just really wanted to invest. I wanted to invest my time and energy into something, just into something, you know. And I thought a business would be a good idea. And it was something I always wanted to do, is just kind of curate a business and just bring, you know, bring something up from scratch of my own.
Yeah.
And so
passion project.
We were actually in Mexico, and I was taking photos of every Mexican menu and eating fucking everywhere in Mexico and trying to get authentic Mexican, because I wanted to open up a Mexican restaurant, right? So taking it pretty serious, and I had, you know, a bit of a business plan going, and the finances were rolling, and just for some reason, I still don't know why, just some reason, I just didn't follow through with it, you know?
Yeah.
And then literally 4 months later, COVID hit, and I was like, fuck, if I had pulled the trigger, I'd be bankrupt right now. Like for real.
I was all in.
Yeah.
Wow.
So then I basically, COVID hit, and then I flew to Nashville during COVID to record our new record.
Yeah.
And that was insane. Like,
I was going to say, because we were chatting at the time when you were like stuck in the airport, I think, when we were talking last year.
Oh, dude.
What was that whole experience like?
That was absolutely mental, like proper mental. That was like during the height of everything where no one knew what was going on. Everyone thought you were going to just drop dead. You thought you were just going to drop dead. Like if someone sneezed on you, that's it, you're fucked. And so we're doing this record with Mark Lewis in Nashville.
Yeah.
And like literally between breaks in the studio, we're like both on our phones, and I'd be like, man, like, you know, my buddy in Viart just cancelled their whole tour. They just played one show. And he's like, I just lost a job for friggin' August. And then he's like, you know, my mate just cancelled their tour. And like, oh, man, I was meant to meet up with the guys on the Devon tour, like on the last night in Nashville. And I hadn't seen those guys in forever. And got a text, oh, dude, not turning the bus around, man. It's all cancelled. And I'm like, the whole fucking world's falling apart.
Literally, the world is breaking down,
I'm in the studio recording the soundtrack of Doom. You know, because like, everything's falling apart. So I would
with tons of double bass.
I was pummeling the world away with fucking 16th note double kicks. And so I'll never, ever forget like that whole experience of just, man, fuck, it was just insane. Like I just had to put my phone away at some point to be able to focus, because it was just too much. It was just so much negativity. And then flying home, when it was like people in gas masks at LAX and just like, man, I'm like, I don't want to die. Like, what the fuck's going on? Yeah, like,
I just want to go home.
Oh my God. I just wanted to go home, and it was just brutal.
Wow, man.
Anyway, it was a great experience because the studio was amazing. It was an incredible studio.
Bring it back to positivity.
So it was an amazing studio, and it was called Addiction Studios in Nashville. And it's like incredible studio, like, you know, multi-million dollar studio. So I came back inspired from that.
Unbelievable. Yeah.
Dude, it was like next level. So I came back really inspired by that, and I just like was like, okay, well, COVID's here. I can't do fuck all. I'm just going to build a studio. Like, fuck it. This is my thing. And it just kind of, that's just how it kind of shaped.
Yeah.
And so I spent the next literally 6 months, I probably spent 6 weeks researching like an absolute autist maniac on YouTube and everything, and how to go about everything. And then, just started building.
Wow. And I'm assuming with working with someone like Mark Lewis, were you unconsciously, well, not even unconsciously, but secretly, you know, oh, that's how he places the hi-hat mic.
Oh, dude, 100%. I'm still like, and sorry to Mark, but I like harassed him and a whole bunch of my engineer mates about, dude, microphones should I be getting for like, or what, dude, what pre's of like, you know, what should I be rocking? And, but he's so cool. Like, I have a lot of respect for Mark. He's a super professional, and he's a great dude, and he puts up with so many of my questions, man. Like, seriously. Yeah. So, yeah, cheers, Mark.
If you're listening, Mark, how do you find it as someone who's obviously you track yourself a lot. How do you find it, someone else tracking you and giving you, because I assume Mark is more of a producer engineer as well, where he actually, you know, produces the tracks.
He's great.
Is it, do you find it, again, as we've said before, it's the equalizer. Do you find it, like, are you welcoming of that kind of stuff? Or do you like to know, like, when you get in the studio, is what you've written, is that generally what ends up on the final thing? Or do you have room for movement somewhat?
For stuff like that Neo album, I put like a serious amount of pre-production work into. So I had a really, really good idea of what was going on. And I kind of really wanted to go in a situation where someone like Mark was listening and saying, giving off ideas. Does that work? Yeah. Does this work? And he's just great at what he does, you know? So he's got such a great ear for detail as well.
Yeah.
And which is something that I really respect, like, as well. And try, I do respect it and try to have one myself. Mm. And so he was great to work with. I think he really knew when to just try and capture what I was doing and when to go, hang on a minute, let's try this or let's try that. Or it was really easy though. He's really, really sick to work with.
Wow, that's cool. Because sometimes, I don't know if you've been in these positions, but sometimes producers can, again, I'm not going to name names, but they can push you to, I feel like, you know, there's all those, I don't know if you've heard all those stories, you know, like of, what's his name? Ross Robinson and stuff, and, you know, riling people up. And getting them to like exhaustion point and all that kind of shit.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. Like, I think I feel like a really great producer figures out what each person's character is. You know what I mean? And exploits
that.
They
can adapt.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Exactly.
And what's their strong points? You know, you're not going to go in a studio when it's, you can't just practice and go, hang on a minute, do that. It's like, well, that's not my comfort zone. It's like,
yeah, exactly. And I think I've definitely been in situations where producers have either just push me to the point where it's just like I'm not enjoying playing the music anymore.
Yeah.
I mean? And then it's just done. You know, it's a bit like, yeah, you can tell that they feel like they're being, they feel like they're doing the right thing, but it's kind of like, and obviously I'm one of those people that never really speaks up. I'm just be like, yeah, that's fine. And in my head, I'm like, fuck you. Fuck you, man.
Yeah. I'll keep that in mind.
Yeah. mainly with producers, but producers, not just producers, but band members. No, I'm joking. But
no, if I'm not enjoying it, man, like I'd want out. I'd hate that. I personally haven't really had that before. I've had some band members be pretty hard on me, but I actually welcome it because they sort of know to a point where they can push me because I enjoy it. But there's a point where you push somewhere and it's like, I don't enjoy this. Like, I'm not going to do it if I don't want to enjoy it. And you're not going to capture the true energy of someone if they're not enjoying something.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
You just got to be able to sense the moment and adapt. And I think that's why, and you've spoken about it on some of your other podcasts, is if you're going to be touring, you need so many skills, like from the social level to the musical level, and being able to adapt to surroundings and your social environment and all that sort of stuff. There's so much involved in being a modern-day muso, man.
Exactly.
And it's fucking nuts.
It's horrible.
It's fucking torturous.
It's like a mental breakdown.
I had to learn how to build a fucking studio. It was fucked.
Oh, dude. I bet that was easier than dealing with some people that you've had to go on tour with.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. I couldn't imagine having a site foreman on board and it's like, those nails aren't straight, motherfucker.
Oh, God. Yeah. I mean, I've got a lot of friends in construction and stuff and some of the horror stories.
Dude,
makes me realize how lucky, you know, we are being in the industries 100%. That we're in.
Matt in Neo, he plays guitar. He's a site foreman and he's got some ripper stories about, you know, some laborers on sites and jeepers creepers. His stress levels through the roof.
Oh yeah, man. I know. And I'm I complain about a bad day and then at the end of the day I just think, no, I get to play drums every day. Or, you know, at the moment, chatting to friends and playing drums.
Yeah, while having cups of tea.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, so I really shouldn't complain, especially in a fucking global pandemic when
that's right.
Losing their shit.
Be grateful, bitch.
Yeah, exactly. So what was, outside of the album, what were your plans last year? Like what would have been interrupted by this? Was there anything that big that you had coming up?
Yeah, well, we had obviously a schedule panned out.
Oh yeah, new album, I guess, and all that.
New
stuff.
Album and touring end of. We're meant to be touring end of mid to late 2020. And I was meant to do the Vipassi record like mid last year as well. And that got pushed back because I built the studio. And just basically on the album cycle again, because we had like 12 months off writing, recording in the middle of cycles. And it was meant to be, right, let's go in, get this done, get it mixed, hit the road again for another three relentless years of touring as you do. And then, and then just, we've just been sitting at home and waiting on everyone to finish their parts, because some of the guys couldn't do parts because of the, like, Melbourne had some of the worst lockdowns in the world.
I remember seeing some news about that.
That is honestly one of the worst things I've ever endured in my life, by far.
Were you not allowed to leave the house at all? Or anything?
We had 5 kilometre restriction and you couldn't leave your house for more than 3 reasons.
Yeah.
Which is like medical, shopping and, you know, caretaking or something. I can't remember.
Okay.
But it just like got to the point where it's like, just, I can't do this shit anymore. I had to, you just like, I sort of, judge me if you will, but I had to ignore a lot of the rules because I just, I couldn't function, you know,
mental health
gym
stuff,
mental health, man, my mental health was shot. Gyms were closed and like gyms a big part of my life and they were all closed and I couldn't do it anymore. And that really, that was probably the biggest thing for me at first, is not being able to hit the gym every day and get my endorphin release and feel good about myself that I've accomplished something, you know, like that's kind of my thing. And then that got taken away and then there's just no touring and then it's just like a big downward spiral from there.
Yeah.
But we're on the up. We're on the up. So.
I think we are. And what's the situation in Australia now? Because it seems from the outside that Australia did really well. But, I mean, I don't know if that's just the kind of the news here trying to make us feel bad about ourselves. I mean, we fucked it. We know we fucked it, but...
I've actually really tapped out of anything media related lately.
Yeah.
I'm not entirely sure where we stand, but it would appear that I did see that we've eased even more restrictions the other day. But unfortunately, they're still keeping venues to 1 person per 2 to 4 square meters, I think it is. So bigger venues are still, they're still shot. They're still only at 30-40%.
Wow.
But we can get 75,000 people to watch a football match.
What?
Yes. Yes.
They've opened sports up, but not.
Yeah. They're now allowing 75% capacity, and the biggest venue in Melbourne holds 100,000. And so you can get 75,000 people to watch, you know, sweaty blokes kick a footy around.
But you can't get sweaty blokes
open the pit
playing metal
at a club. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And it's just like, I just can't personally, can't see the consistency and the logic behind it. And it kind of really, really bothers me. So I've just tapped out of all of it. And I'm just like, I'm just doing me now.
Yeah, absolutely. I completely understand that. And I think, I've mentioned this before, but I had a real, especially when it first kicked off, all of this last year, the first couple of months, the first month or two, maybe, I didn't enjoy it, but it was kind of like a weird new life that I'd never had before.
It was different, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. One's ever had it before. And in a lot of ways, I kind of liked it, you know, the lack of pressure from a lot of things, you know, like you didn't have to do as much, which, you know, and you could do more for yourself in a lot of ways.
That's true.
And then the longer time's gone on, kind of that negativity's crept in, like, oh, when's some kind of normality?
Yeah,
return,
it just kind of draws on, keeps going on.
And I think, you know, as you said, the key for me was not reading the news and also staying off social media more, because social media was just a fucking downward spiral for me.
Yeah, it's a double-edged sword, social media. You know, it's like that thing that I've always said, if I wasn't a musician, I wouldn't have it. Like, seriously.
100%,
100%. I would not have it. And I pretty much only use social media for the most part to hold myself accountable. So like putting up videos, and of course we only put up stuff that we think's sick for the most part. I do, it's like I have to hold myself accountable, because especially when you're playing 100, 150 shows a year, man, people see you play.
Yeah.
And if you're not putting up like sick stuff and you're not like playing sick, people are going to go, oh, what's going on? So
I
use it for that motivational sort of self, I don't know what you call it, but just to try to keep myself accountable, to keep myself motivated and to try and perform at a high level as often as I can.
Yeah. Yeah. You seem like, to me anyway, from the outside, it seems like you're a big practicer. Are you?
Yeah. I try to play every day.
A regular practicer.
Yeah, I try to play every day. Yeah.
Mm. Do you have set routines? Yeah. Like, kind of, do you have things that you do constant? Because keeping up that, talking about the footwork, keeping up that footwork especially is like, that doesn't just come. It's not like riding a bike.
No, dude, it's a big workload, man. That's like, that's the hardest thing with gigs gone now is that level of match fitness is what I like to call it. You know, deteriorated. Yeah. And it's really not easy at all. It takes a lot of maintenance.
Still striving for it now? Like, do you still do those things as regularly as you would have, or have you kind of dropped off slightly?
Not as much. I pretty much do it as per the project requires. So the last record I did had some stuff at 2:30, and I haven't played at say 2:30, 2:40 for quite a while. And that took a fair bit of work to get that back again. Yeah. So I was doing drills for that. But I definitely do have a bit of a set routine. Obviously, like, to just warm up and do some drills for 30 minutes to an hour, and then I just work on whatever I've got coming up. So it's normally just a record or whatever. I'll just practice through the clicks and write my parts. But I actually just booked or confirmed a production crew for a live stream out of my studio.
Ooh, wow. That's sick.
Yeah. So I've just sort of been itching to play live like every musician ever.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I sort of was just not against the idea of doing a live stream, but I'm just like, I don't know if I'm going to get out of it what kind of a gig gives you know?
Yeah. It's always going to be different, I guess, but it's something, isn't it?
Yeah, but I just kind of needed something to work towards. And because I haven't played a whole bunch of the tracks like consistently for 18 months now.
Yeah.
I'm like, all right, cool. So I'm going to give myself like a 3-month cue into doing this live stream. So by 3 months I've got to be like really on it, because it's going to be like a live stream thing and there's no hiding anything going on.
And is it going to be like an actual live stream too? Like,
I'm not sure yet. I'll see what's possible. But I'm definitely like, I've got our lighting guy is going to program a full set, and then we're going to bring in lights. Yeah. And we're going to bring in lights and have, you know, great sound and all that sort of stuff and 4K. And I'm going to do 3 sets. So I'm going to do a set from one band I play in called A Million Dead Birds Laughing. It's like grind.
Yeah.
Death
I love
stuff.
That shit, man. Yeah.
Sick.
I remember seeing one of your YouTube videos on that and I was like, who is this band? They're fucking sick.
Yeah. They're really cool. That's another really fun band. The same guy who's in Vipassi, who writes a lot of that, writes that music too.
Ah, cool. Okay.
Yeah. Ben Boyle. And so I'll do about 25 minute set of that. And then I'll do a 25 minute set of Vipassi, which I've never played any Vipassi material live before. It's always been a studio band. So learning the songs from like five years ago is going to be fucking nuts, man. Yeah. And then I'll do like a 30, 40 minute Neo set.
Wow.
So it'll be like an hour and 40 minutes or something like that.
Okay.
Hour and 35. Yeah.
I was going to say you're going to have breaks in between, but depending on how it goes, I guess, it will depend on how you
record it. I probably want to keep it in one long thing, but obviously I'll break the video down. But I sort of play one set, I find from doing double sets over the years, like if I do one set and I have a break in between, the next set's just not as good.
Just not as good, yeah, because everything's going. Everything's pumping. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. I actually did a European tour where I sessioned for the opening band and it was on a headlining one of ours.
Yeah.
And it was the opening, it was about 30 minute set, but it's like, it was brutal stuff, you know, 220, 240, extreme tech death.
Constant.
It was like, pretty full on stuff. And then there was a band in between who played 40 or 45. So plus changeovers is about an hour and a bit between sets. And then I had to play a 94 minute headliner. And I did that for 6 weeks and it was like, the fifth week, man. I was like, fuck, this is brutal.
Like genuine body problems.
It really was, man. 2 sound checks a day, 2 warm-ups a day, and 2 sets a day. Yeah, it was brutal.
But just 90 minutes as a headline set in general is a long fucking time, man. Like that,
man, it is.
Like, especially with extreme, you know, extreme. Again, Neo's got some not-so-extreme music, but the drumming is pretty much always extreme one way or another.
It's a hell of a workout. It really is.
Yeah, so 90 minutes.
It's very physical.
It's fucking crazy. And then you were doing
tips. Yeah. I mean, even if we're playing covers for 90 minutes, that's like
Yeah,
you know, you get a sweat up, man. Like,
absolutely. Yeah. Well, I think the longest Carcass has ever played is about 90 minutes, and that was fucking horrible. And we only did it once. So.
Fucking horrible, right? We won't do that again.
So, yeah, doing that for 6 weeks on top of fucking opening band. That's insane.
That was a big test. I sort of only did it to kind of just test myself, but yeah, I certainly did. Probably won't do it again. Yeah.
Yeah. So with the live stream thing, this is, I guess it's a really great way for you to, as you've said, kind of get yourself focused on something and kind of get back it. Was that the main reason you did it, or was it more for the live thing as well, or is it kind of a mixture of those two things too?
It's mainly just to have something to work on. So it's just healthier for me mentally to have that in my life. So once that live stream thing's done, I'm going to need something else. So I'm going to have to come up with something else, whether it's just do some more clinics around town or just whatever it is. I'll just need something to work on, because I found that if I don't, that's just not healthy for me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I guess that's why, the gym stuff worked well for you. Do you think that's why as well you're kind of drawn to the more physical aspects of extreme drumming? Because all of the bands that I'm aware that you play in, Neo, Vipassi, and A Million Dead Birds Laughing, because last night when I was obviously prepping for this, and I was listening through stuff and whatever, they're all fucking extreme, dude.
Oh, it's just fucking nuts, man.
You don't have a chilled band.
Man, I don't know if it's been like really by choice. It's just sort of happened that way, you know? And that's like, I've only ever really practiced like drills and you know, all the boring drills to be able to play in these bands, because it's just, I just enjoy it, you know? So I've never been like a guy, I just want to hit 260 or I just want to hit whatever this tempo is or whatever. I've never been someone like that. I'm always like, I like to think of myself as musician first, drummer second.
Yeah. But you just happen to play in these kind of bands that require so happens, that kind of shit.
But I get punished by guitarists relentlessly. Namely Ben Boyle, he does it to me the most.
Well, that Vipassi stuff, man, like, again, like, I wasn't really aware of that stuff. You sent me that the newest stuff, which is really cool. And obviously I checked out the first album. Again, that's super unique. It's the arrangements are fucking crazy.
Dude, it's nuts, man. It's like super challenging creatively to be able to feel safe in that space, you know, if you know what I mean, for it to do it justice. It's just so nuts. It's so nuts. But it's a really nice feeling. Like when I did drums for the new one, it was just such a relief to have that body of work done and dusted, you know. It's all there, and it's kind of, I enjoy that process where you put a body of work in, you do it, and you finished it, and you get to go, right, well, I got something from it, you know. It's really fulfilling feeling.
I guess it's in a similar way. It's like finishing your studio off.
Yeah, you know, it really is. Yeah. Yeah.
Like putting all that time, brutal, that research, that preparation, and then
killing
yourself for 5 months. And then
literally. Yeah, cutting my fingers up, you know, accidents with, there was one point where I had a mate over, Troy, my sound dude, and we were putting in a massive weekend of work, like 16, 18 hours a day, sleeping for a few hours, getting up and back at it.
Jesus,
and Alex, my partner, actually banned me from power tools because I was just so shocked. She's told Troy, she's like, you can't touch any more power tools. And I was like, nah, come on, we're all good. Like, let's go.
It's like bloodshot eyes.
Oh, yeah. Like out of a cartoon, you know, like just mental. Yeah.
Ren and Stimpy or something.
Yeah, totally. Those big bloodshot eyes. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, man.
Did you play any drums during that period?
Not much, just on pads. That was one of the things that was killing me too. Was no gym and then no drums. Well, minimal drums.
Yeah.
So that was a very, very tough period. But once it was finished and I got to work towards, you know, doing music in a studio again, was you know, the reward was worth it.
Yeah. Yeah. You seem to do a lot of work on pads. Do you find pads better for that kind of speed stuff and just for kind of keeping up your, you know, stuff?
Yeah, I sort of like pads because I can put a metronome on and just put like entertainment on, whether it's just, you know, YouTube or Netflix, and just watch it and sort of just zone out and just get my drills done. And it doesn't really feel like I'm doing anything, you know,
just sort of
goes by, and just to keep that consistency.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's really hard to execute, you know, long extreme metal sets consistently at a high level. And I think if I don't do the pad work, I can't really, maintain that. And I'm really, really, really big on live performances. So putting in every show, doesn't matter how many people are there, I like to really put in a big effort keep a high energy for the whole set. Mm. And it's quite hard to maintain. Yeah. Dude, it's freaking hard, man. But it's a challenge, and you know, I really do like challenges. So
yeah, kind of goes hand in hand. Like, again, being into fitness, obviously, do you find that you've had to figure out ways to kind of conserve your energy when you're playing those longer sets and with these kind of bands?
Definitely, that was a learning process. Like, I remember when we were first touring and first started headlining sets at, say, 60 minutes, you come out of the gates and you're like, stick heights up over your head, and just slowly as the set goes on, you're like, you're breathing, you're going, oh, God, am I going to make the next song, you know?
Yeah.
And eventually... eventually I got to a level where, you know, it just looks cool to be able to lift sticks high. It looks like a lot of energy. And I got to a point where I could really hit hard and lift sticks high, and it didn't really feel like I was outpouring too much energy. I don't know if that comes down to conditioning or just efficiency or something, but
yeah,
it really got down to a point where I could maintain a high energy from start to finish.
Yeah.
And that just came again from brutal repetition. Because before tours as well, like, I play the set like sometimes twice a day before tours. Yeah, just to be prepped to make sure the first show is kind of at least semi-good.
Yeah, because that's
the first one's always brutal.
Oh, dude,
you got the rental kit.
Yeah, and, you exactly.
Know, yeah,
everything feels weird. Nothing's quite right. And then that 10-inch tom just won't tune the way I want it to tune. And like,
yeah, man, 100%.
Everything's a bit bouncy and like weird. Yep.
Yeah, so I try to practice before tours. I try to push myself harder at home when I'm practicing, because it makes the set a bit easier, because it's under more duress, you know, whether you've got the riser that's moving or the lighting or the you've got the old halogen globes on your back, like destroying you with heat.
No fan.
All that stuff. So I try to really punish myself at home basically 2 weeks before we go out. Just so that if something does happen, I'm a little bit more conditioned to probably deal with it in a better way than if I wasn't.
Yeah, because again, I've spoken about this before, but it's quite literally the little things that are the things
it really
that,
is.
That completely fuck you up, that you don't even realize are gonna, you know, like stuff that you could never practice for. Like as me and Crim said about, like, you know, slippery pedals. Also, because you accidentally stepped in like a beer or something on the way to the stage.
Oh my goodness,
like...
your whole show is ruined.
Yeah, it is. It is. You know, that's all you're thinking about.
I'm the same with Crim in that I actually changed my shoes on the riser as well.
Oh, okay, yeah. Yeah.
So I got drumming shoes like he does, and they live with my pedals and they don't go anywhere but on the riser.
Wow. It's the only way, though. It is literally
it really
the only
is.
Way, isn't it?
Really
Otherwise,
is.
You're completely screwed.
You know, if you're touring in winter and there's snow outside and you know, you're loading in, if you're one of the middle bands, you've got to load in or during the, you know, and you step in something like, it's not as simple as just getting a towel and quickly rubbing it, like the residue, and there's just so many factors. And the humidity on pedals.
Oh man,
also affects how slippery or how coarse or how much grip you've got.
Yeah.
You know,
and especially when you're doing stuff like you're doing, especially, I mean, I used to play a lot faster than I do now. I'm getting old, but it's like those tiny minute details make so much fucking difference.
They really do.
At those tempos and for that kind of maintaining those kind of tempos as well.
Yeah. I actually figured something out for when when you have a climate condition where you're very slippery on the pedal. Mm. So I get like the oil off your skin. I used to rub on my shoes, and for like, for a good 15 minutes or so, you had really good grip. And then the next song, I'd rub the oil, you know, just the sweat and oil off your shoes, off your hands. I'd rub on the bottom of my shoes, and it would kind of keep me going through.
Wow.
Yeah.
There we go. There's a little pro tip.
I don't know how pro it is, but there's something. It's science, man.
Exactly. Yeah. I guess that makes sense because it's kind of making it more earthy and kind of gripping, but I don't know. I don't know what the thing behind that is.
That's with a rubber sole. So I don't know how that would work with, I don't know if you had synthetic sole or whatever, but that kind of worked for me.
Everybody uses different things. And oh man, people that play without shoes on. Like when I first started, I played without shoes because I think I was a kid and, you know, I didn't really know what I was doing.
Yeah.
And then when I started gigging, I was like, I mean, what, you have to wear shoes.
Yeah. Or what about on the Axis pedals? Everyone's used Axis on the logo. Your skin gets torn up on that frigging pedal. Dude,
Exactly. And like, I mean, it's super lame, but it's cold as fuck as well when you first put your...
It really is. Especially in your conditions up north in Europe and that, man. Like,
oh, dude, yeah.
Holy shit.
Yeah, what's the weather like for you now? Is it nice?
We're coming out at the end of summer.
Oh, you're coming out of summer now, aren't you? Yeah.
Yeah, so we're like reverse of you guys, basically.
And you're Melbourne, right? So you have kind of crazy interchangeable weather anyway.
Yeah, there's like four seasons in a day. Quite a bit.
I love that, though. Yeah. I love that.
Yeah, yeah.
makes me feel like I'm at home when there's rain.
It certainly beats UK weather, I've got to say.
Oh, dude. Anywhere in Australia beats. Yeah, I was going to say. But I mean,
it's not hard at all.
I'm currently in my little box drum room thing, which is like a metal. It's like a metal box. And it's, I mean, it's probably what? It's probably 12 degrees outside Celsius.
Right.
And, but it's fucking freezing in here. So I have to, I've got this like fan heater just pointing at me, just like, just blowing.
Yeah.
And that until we get to probably June, I'm probably going to have that fan heater on 24 hours a day.
Yeah. 100%. Yeah.
And then in the summer, it's unbelievably way too hot. So, you know.
Yeah. But back in the day, I used to hire out a shipping container to play drums in this industrial estate, and it was on top of another shipping container. So I used to have to get a forklift. Load up a pallet with all my shit to get it up there. It was a permanent room I eventually had, but if I had gigs or something, I'd have to get a forklift to get it down. But it had no air conditioning or heating or anything. And it's in this like 20-foot steel box that's 20-foot in the air.
Exposed to all the elements, I guess, because it's so high up.
Sweating bollocks.
I guess no gym. Hard. You didn't need the gym.
Oh God, no.
Are you? I mean, you must like living in Australia, but doing a lot of traveling. Are there other countries and like parts of the world that you kind of fall in love with? Because I'm totally in love with Australia. Yeah. I'd happily move to Australia if I could.
When, when did you come here? When have you been here?
Oh, I've been.
I probably went to those shows, but I can't remember them.
Oh shit!
Yeah. If I was in town,
that's good questions. I came first time with Aborted when I, God fuck, I can't remember. It was Necrophagist, Aborted. I was a Summer Slaughter, Australia,
2012.
Yeah, fucking hell! Wow. Yeah, that was the first time I ever came to Australia.
A Million Dead Birds Laughing played on that show as an opener.
Really?
Oh yeah, but God. I wasn't drumming in the band. Oh, at you weren't in the band. I had a different drummer. Wow. Yeah, but I definitely remember that tour. Yeah.
Wow, because I was going to say, I was going to mention, we've never actually met
Corner Hotel, have we?
Yeah,
no, we haven't. Shit, no, we haven't. Well, we were going to hook up at Download. Remember Download Australia?
Dude, so I was so excited.
I was so bitter about that. Like I had this epic friggin' tour of Australia lined up with like heaps of stuff, and I was really bummed that didn't come to fruition. Really,
and it
bummed,
was
actually.
Like for us, it was so close because I remember. I mean, of all things, I remember going to get my hair cut when you know this was all kicking up. This was way before
when you
lockdown.
Got the text.
Yeah, yeah, and like we did because I guess it was a year ago yesterday that there was like this awful like Remembrance Day yesterday for a year since the first lockdown, and everyone was you know
oh god
a minute silence for a year of no you know I was like shut up
R.I.P. Yeah.
R.I.P. old life. And I went to the hairdressers and I was talking, just chatting, you know, as you do, get my hair cut. And the lady who was cutting my hair, she was just like, this thing's gonna pass quicker than it came. Like we're you know, no one's even gonna know about
it. I love the optimism,
I know.
Carry on.
And I was like, probably. And then and I was like, I'm gonna go to Australia in a few days or whatever. And she was like, oh, that'll be wicked. Hope you know. Make sure you're safe out there. And then literally as I walked out the hairdressers, there was like four emails from, you know, Jeff and
our
booker and stuff. And they were like, we're going to have to cancel this. I was like, fuck this. And then obviously.
So bummed, dude.
I know. That would have been sick,
man,
too.
I was pumped for that tour. I can't remember who else was on that run, but there was a few like really sick dudes and a couple of people I hadn't met before.
I hope we could do it. Wow. We will do it again. We will, man. We're going to have to.
Positivity.
Do it.
Yeah, exactly. 100%. Yeah.
Exactly. Right. Obviously, I would talk forever, but I have a limit on what I can upload.
Yes. So,
and I want to.
If you made it this far, congratulations.
Exactly. Exactly. And obviously, I want to do the little quiz thing that I like to do if you're up for it. Yeah, cool. Let's go. So I change them a little bit every week. They're relatively similar.
Oh, I've noticed.
Yeah. So I try and make it, you know, for the guest, for each a little bit more appropriate. Okay, so, and this always takes me like 2 hours to do this. So.
Another 2 hours in.
Yeah, so exactly. So if we get started now, we'll be done by 2 a.m. your time. So.
Perfect.
Cool, right. So, coffee or tea?
Yeah, probably coffee, even though I've just finished the tea.
Yeah, but it's probably evening, coffee. I guess. Is tea an evening drink?
Yeah, it would be. Yeah. Yeah.
Are you what kind of tea? Are you a fruit tea or like a peppermint tea?
Well, I just got some, hang on. It's called French Earl Grey. I just picked it up before.
Ooh, very nice. Earl Grey.
So, good. Quite suave.
Yeah. I was going to say, that's sophisticated as fuck.
I'm into my coffee, but I'm not as into it as like so many dudes have got their own machines and setups and they're on Instagram putting up photos every day and it looks like a frigging gourmet.
I know.
Hipster cafe. And I'm like,
I just don't have
shit.
The time.
I kind of
want to.
Well, I love coffee, but I should probably stop spending like $5.3 a day
each time
on coffee. Like if I just save my pennies, I'll get like a really nice machine.
Yeah, that's true. There's something nice about buying it though. I think it's the knowledge that you haven't had to do anything.
There is.
And it's still
drive
tastes
down,
good.
Get it, and drive home. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay, so generally coffee.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Morning or evening?
I think that varies for me. I like the morning when I get up and I'm productive. Mm. But if I'm not doing that, then yeah, probably evening.
But
once all the work's done.
You work
relax.
Relatively late, right? Because when we were trying to organize this, you were saying you have work stuff in the evening.
Yeah, I do. That changes a bit too. But yeah, probably I'll go with morning.
Yeah.
Yep.
Something about morning, waking up. Fresh
there is
sun outside.
Fresh.
Coffee.
What am I going to do today?
Yeah,
will I get
exactly.
it done?
Optimism, yeah. Exactly.
Yes,
for the most
crippling
part,
anxiety.
Kind of a mix of the two, exactly.
Yeah.
Right. Summer or winter? It's got to be summer.
Oh, summer.
Here in Australia.
Yeah, it's got to be, mate.
It's constant mate. Summer, right?
It's most of Australia is. Yeah. Where I'm in Melbourne, it's down south. It gets a lot cooler in winter. Mm. Like we'll hit like 8 to 12 degrees during the day sometimes.
Oh, okay. Okay.
But I think the average in winter is about 15, 16.
Okay, so it's still relatively...
No, it's pretty good. Yeah, it's fresh.
So beach or countryside?
I'd definitely go countryside, even though I grew up on the beach, yeah.
Yeah. I was going to say, are you born and raised Melbourne as well?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's, nice beachy place to grow up.
Yeah, I actually, the first 8 years of my life was on the coast, like literally on the coast. And I do love the beach, but I think I've just evolved to like the country.
Yeah.
Maybe it's from the my black metal roots that I used to listen to, the Emperor and the Mayhem.
Dreams of living
in the
Norway.
Forest and, doing blast beats, in the middle of winter.
Exactly. Right. So do you guys say crisps or chips? I can never remember.
Chips.
Dude, yeah. Okay.
Chips.
Yeah. Well, you know.
And I'm a chips man. Yeah.
I think you're not a chocolate guy.
Nah, not really. Not at all.
What? Are you a sweets guy? Do you like sweet stuff?
Not really.
Oh, man.
Not really.
I think I'm the only one so far that's...
Really? Holy shit.
Yeah, that loves chocolate. Yeah.
Okay,
I'm obsessed. Okay, so, Crit, have you got a flavour of chip or just any chips?
Oh, well, probably... I just like original salted, you know?
Yeah, I mean...
Ticks all the boxes.
It really does. When you're in the mood... They just do everything you need, don't they? A ready salted crisp is just perfect. Yeah, especially
just put
like
it in my tongue. Let's go
backstage snacking, especially after a show. I'm just I'm straight in all the carbs,
dude. We have and I freaking hate it. I get so mad. It's on the right of this always like corn chips, like Doritos or whatever. CCs or whatever you guys have and hummus, and it just gets absolutely demolished. There's like six hands fighting for chips and fucking hummus.
Just trying to get your energy levels back.
Fucking hell, yeah. 94-minute set, you know, like
exactly.
2,500 calories.
You just need
Where's
bread.
The chips and hummus?
Bread and chips.
That's all there is. And white bread beer.
Exactly, yeah. It's perfect. Exactly.
Yeah.
Right, okay, so I know you're... I'm assuming you're still vegan, obviously. You're a vegan.
Yeah. Yeah,
so tofu or tempeh? Do you have a preference?
Probably just tofu because I have it more.
Yeah. More easily available as well, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
I got friends that make their own tempeh and stuff, but that just seems like a bollock. Yeah. Seems
right,
like a
bollock
to me.
I don't even know what's involved.
Yeah, me neither. But Bill, our guitar player, is big into, because he was vegan when in like 1985 or something.
Shit, imagine being vegan back then. It'd be nothing.
He's told me that.
We on tour and just eating trees and grass.
It was just like most of the time it was just rice and ketchup. He said it was a lot of the, meals.
Do you know Jamie from Ulcerate?
I don't know him, but obviously I know Ulcerate and
phenomenal and drummer. And
he's
like
an unbelievable drummer, yeah.
Great dude, sick dude. But he's been vegan for like a long, long time. And he told me stories about when he first started touring. And it was just so brutal to just try and eat and find something, you know.
Because everyone's like, heard of vegetarian, but like vegan back then must have been like, so what does that even mean?
Oh, it would be another world. Dude, when we did China the first time, I remember going to a restaurant. And our TM is trying to order for everyone. And the Chinese, like in mainland central China, do not know what vegetarian is. So we're trying to order salads, right? Salad, no meat, just salad, like just whatever. And it would come out with chicken pieces in it because they just
don't
understand.
Think chicken
like,
is
what,
meat.
What? Yeah, they're just like salad. Oh, just, you know, like, and it took quite a bit to go, no, just.
Yeah,
no animal products, please.
just the green stuff. Just the green bits.
Yeah, just the green stuff. Yeah, not the gizzards.
I mean, now I guess it's relatively, most places you go, it's relatively easy, I guess.
Yeah, it is. It's so easy now. Mm. Really is.
But some of the stories that Bill's told me about back in the day, like in the 80s.
I could only imagine, dude.
Yeah, it's just nightmare. I mean, and holding out, still being a vegan whilst, you know.
Yeah, imagine how grumpy you'd get.
I know, dude. Like,
you get hangry all the time.
If I don't eat for 2 hours, I'm just a horrible person. So.
yeah.
Especially if all I have is rice and ketchup. It's just.
Oh, God.
Right. Oh, God. Anyway, sorry. Again, this has taken me forever, as it always does.
It's all good. All good.
I've always got an anecdote for every little thing. But
yeah.
I don't know if you drink it because obviously you don't. You're a chips guy, but Coke or Pepsi?
I mean, I don't really drink either much. And so I wouldn't really
so
be
much
able to...
healthier than me.
I don't know if I'd really be able to proper tell the difference if we did like a blind A/B test.
Wow. Have you got a soft drink that you go to, or are you just a water guy?
Not really. No, I do drink a lot of water. Not really. No, I like doing sparkling water and tea.
Oh. Okay.
Like kind of fancy pantsy teas. That's really cool. Wow. Nice refreshing drink. Yeah, with a bit
refreshing,
of ice.
I was gonna say that must be. Yeah. Like a fizzy iced tea. Wow. Nice.
Yeah, another pro tip.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's £5 a tip, so I think we're up to £15 now.
I was gonna say I'm gonna have to start some kind of PayPal situation, aren't I, to get Right, okay, so this one is very UK versus Australia. Marmite or Vegemite? Right.
Oh god. It's Vegemite all the way, man.
See, I've never tried Vegemite. I've only had Marmite.
Oh, really?
I don't like Marmite as it is. So, okay. I'm one of those people. So I assume do they taste relatively similar, or are they wildly different?
They're both full of yeast and salt. So, yeah. I mean, yeah.
How different can you get? I guess.
Yes, I mean I do love some Vegemite and toast.
So, YouTube or Netflix?
Oh, definitely YouTube. I don't watch any entertainment at all, unless I'm on a plane.
Yeah, because you have time to kill.
I watch YouTube, obviously a lot of drum videos. Yeah. And you know how you just like go on those deep, long rabbit holes and you end up watching like how gold's melted and fucking how these dudes, I don't know, just dudes down mines and shit. Like,
absolutely.
How did I get here? Dudes making like cars out of mud and shit. Like,
oh,
what
I know.
The hell?
Yeah, how one guy, but I saw one recently how one guy built a, what's it called? Like a nuclear shelter in his garden, and like the whole process.
Perfect.
It was amazing. And
perfect.
It,
you know, yeah, I love that shit.
And then 50 minutes later, I was like, the fuck am I doing with my life?
I know, it's like bedtime, past bedtime, and all of a sudden, you're like, what's next comes up, and you just can't resist.
suggested.
Can't resist. Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, YouTube. I mean, it's informational. So, yeah. Okay, so we'll do the music ones. Studio or live? That's always a tough one.
Yeah. That's kind of hard. I love live because that's when everything comes alive. And I think that's when, especially after a couple of tours, I think that's when a song really, really starts to come alive.
Yeah.
But I love the studio and I'm really fascinated about the whole process with recording.
Especially now, so, even more so, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially now, even more so. So that's, I'd have to toss a coin on that one.
Yeah. Okay. 50-50.
I'll say live because I can't do it at the moment.
yeah. There you go. See, always want what you don't have. There we go.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah.
Okay. So festival or club?
Yeah. That's
equally
tough.
As tough.
There's like, because I've listened to all the answers from what everyone else said too, and there's so many good points. Like guys say, you always conflict with a band you want to see.
Yeah.
Or you've got to get in a frigging golf buggy and spend 15 minutes in a golf buggy to go on the other side of the festival.
And then you get 2 minutes before you set. Yeah.
2 minute changeover.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't know what gear you've got, even though you've confirmed via email three times that all the gear is going to be there.
Especially in Mexico. Sorry, Mexico. We love you.
Oh, my God.
we love you, Mexico.
That on 70. Yeah, we love you. Yeah. I had that on 70K. And like, I'm so specific about every piece of hardware and everything. Like, my ride is like detailed, charted out, graphed. Like, you just can't go wrong. And I confirmed twice, you know, like, and we get, will we get this? Yes, yes, everything's there. And you've got backline crew and all this. Yeah. Okay, cool. So we get there and I just, we're on the stage that's in the theater, like a theater room.
Oh, yeah.
And, for whatever reason, half the backline was on other stages, like other dudes come and rip backline out to go.
No.
You know what I mean? Like there's just Lego everywhere.
To borrow it for another stage.
And so I had to make up like a Frankenstein thing and it was just not pleasant, you know, like, and you've got like, what, like 35 minutes or something to set it all up and to set, you know, a big double bass kit up.
And line check too.
Yeah, from scratch, you know.
Yeah.
So you're literally throwing a kit on stage while you're setting it up, you know, hitting a tom, adjusting here and there. And it's just
mental. I need your kick. I'm not ready.
Yeah. Oh, Jesus. I missed that.
Yeah, I was going to say I'd give many things for that right now.
Yeah.
Be shouting at my sound guy, I'm not ready yet.
Yeah, 100%.
So, so is that 50-50 down the middle?
I'd say we're just... I mean, I got to say club shows because I just haven't done it for like 2 years. So
fair.
Yeah, I've been in the studio for 2 years nonstop. So
you haven't seen multiple faces in front of you for a while.
No, I haven't. No.
Right. So EU tour or US tour? This one's always controversial.
Oh yeah.
And interesting as because everyone I've spoken to has either been European or North American. So now as a non-European or North American,
and I don't have a, this is the real answer, so
third party opinion.
Jeez, it's really difficult because the US is a lot of gas stations.
Yeah,
there's not many showers.
Yeah, it's true.
The weather can change like day to day dramatically
depending on how far you drive as well.
The food can be absolutely shot beyond belief. But the crowds are incredible.
Yeah.
I don't mind. Like, I don't know how you guys tour the US. We do bandwagons.
Mm.
They're kind of shot, like they bounce around everywhere, but we kind of make it our own, you know?
Yeah. I don't mind both. I've done buses and bandwagons, and obviously buses is incredible. So
I haven't done a bus tour in the US. So.
As well.
Yeah,
but
cool.
They're, again, a little bit more rugged.
It is rugged, man. Some of those bandwagons, dude, if you get a top bunk and you're up the back, like, holy shit. You
hold on for dear
flying
life.
Around. Dude, have you guys got a process like when you get on the bus or the bandwagon? Has everyone got their set places they sleep or it's just like...
Well, generally, but it's kind of like first come, first serve usually.
Yeah.
And whoever... Have you got rules? Like, everyone has the same
I just... It's a bit of a free-for-all, yeah. Yeah, it's a bit of a free-for-all. It's quite funny, actually. But everyone, because we've done so many tours now, everyone's sort of got their preference. So I like the middle bunks.
Yeah. Okay.
Some guys like the bottom. And our vocalist, Zen, for some reason, likes the top bunk.
No idea, because you just get thrown around everywhere.
Yeah,
it's exactly. A fucking nightmare. Exactly. You throw the crew up in the top bunk.
People can kick you from the bottom if they're like messing around in their bunk and shit.
And just the center of gravity up there, you get thrown around more. Like.
Yeah, and it's hotter because obviously the heat always rises if it's a hot thing or the heating's on or whatever.
And getting in and out.
Oh, getting in and out is the worst bit. I didn't even think about that.
Stepping on the dudes in the middle bunk to like get in and.
When you need a piss in the middle of the night and you're like half asleep, trying to get down off a top bunk is just the worst.
Yeah. But obviously Euro Tours, you've got catering. It's so nice. Yeah.
The venues are usually lush.
Yes. It's just kind of a bit smoother, I think. Mm. So I'll probably go with Euro Tour. Yeah.
Drum roll.
I'll probably go with the Euro Tour simply because of the catering.
Yeah, and I can respect that.
Being a dude who doesn't eat meat, it's much easier for me. But the one downside for Europe is the gym situation, because we normally hit the gym every day. We'll Uber to the gym, Uber back. Yeah. You get a shower, get a workout, and the gym situation is really tough in Europe compared to the US.
I can imagine. Yeah.
Yeah. So we just get like an LA fitness.
Often European venues will be in the middle of nowhere as well. Like they'll be on some kind of
like
industrial estate in Munich. Yeah, exactly.
Backstage in Munich. God's sakes, you got to catch two trams to go down into the city. Like,
yeah, and they're always like that. Like, they're in like some kind of middle of nowhere industrial estate.
It is.
I mean, it's great. I mean, it's lucky that it's set up in the way that everything self-contains and you don't need to go find food and all that stuff. But if you do need to go do stuff, that's sometimes an issue because you're fucking miles away from anything.
Oh, it really is. It really is. So I'll settle on Euro Tour.
Okay.
But I do have a conflict of interest there. So.
But there are perks. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. So, I mean, I don't know. Everyone has said the same answer for this. I'll see if yours is different. Blast or groove?
Oh, fuck. You know what? If you had asked me this question 10 years ago, it was blast.
Yeah. Yeah.
But in the last 10 years, it's slowly I'm definitely over. Trying to get that groove. I think we maybe all understand that the groove element probably gives you more access to paychecks than not.
I don't want to say maturity because it's not saying that obviously blasting is for for kids or whatever, but I think maybe there's an element of getting older. Maybe it's the physical side of it, like blasting's harder.
Yeah, probably. Probably.
Because I still love blast beats. I'm sure
yeah, same
with you. I still listen to them every day and play them every day. But something about groove. No.
It is. I really try to mix the both. Making extreme music groove is really challenging. It's really challenging. Yeah. And I think that just comes with experience too, as well, is really learning and understanding that kind of stuff. But I've definitely been more groove focused over the last, 8-10 years. But love throwing in a blast. Love it.
Yeah.
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 Still, it's a cheeky blast.
It's still fun and it's still it will still be as impressive as it always is when someone does a fucking sick fast blast, I think.
Oh yeah, with like massive stick height and just like
exactly.
Just tearing it. Yeah, it's great.
Crazy snare consistency and all that stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right, I think I know the answer to this one. And double pedal or two kicks. I've never seen you play with a double pedal, apart from on your pads.
Yeah. Right.
Do you ever play with double pedal?
I have there's been some tours where, you send those backline in confirmation emails twice and you get twice back. No, there's no second bass drum. Okay, double pedal gets packed in and, quite often touring from Australia, we go through Asia or we come back through Asia or we go to like Israel or just these odd countries.
Yeah.
And, sometimes I have to pack a double pedal and it's just like the Neo especially is not the sort of thing where I can just pick up a pedal and just
play whatever.
Rip a set. Get those old iron cobras up and then just rip. Yeah. It's just not happening.
Double chain drive.
Like I am shot halfway through a track. Like I've had to do it a couple of times and it's just
brutal.
It's fucked. It's fucked. Yeah. It's a nightmare.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's just too much double bass. But in saying that, I can play on like almost any pedal, but that's playing in Neo specifically, there's just so much double bass.
With that
I just really have to be comfortable. Yeah.
Mm.
Definitely double bass.
Yeah, two single kicks.
I just like that feel.
Yeah, and there's absolutely, even those, because Adrian was talking about the Chachi, Capito, whatever that's called, which you use, obviously.
CKs.
Yeah. There we go. and obviously Krim uses too. And obviously there is almost no lag between the pedals on the double pedal anyway. Dude. But there's just there's such a different feel, isn't there, with two bass drums. It's
there is
a crazy difference.
It really is. And I am really enjoying recording with two bass drums and getting that slightly different sound as well.
Yeah,
I just really like having, I'm really big on, in the extreme stuff I do anyway, is blending the sample and the natural sound.
Yeah, yeah.
And just having that natural, just having the presence of that natural kick sound and having that slight difference.
The low end.
Again, it probably reminds me of the old school albums. Maybe.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure the kind of inconsistencies quite with the
slaps, you know. Yeah. I don't know why. I used to hate that, but now I love it. Like it's
Just. Yeah.
So, two bass drums.
Maturity, as we say, getting old.
Yeah, getting old, man. Holy shit.
Pining for the old days.
Yeah.
Cool. Right. I think I know the answer to this one, but I don't know if everyone will. 5As or 2Bs?
Oh, dude. 2Bs. I use bigger than 2B.
I know. You use rocks, right? You use rocks?
Yeah, rocks, yeah.
Could you ever play a set with a 5A, do you think?
Oh, fuck. It depends on the band. It really would.
Yeah, okay.
I rely on the weight and the mass of a stick to get through certain, especially trying to really hit hard and going fast. I find the biggest stick really helps me.
Yeah.
The lighter stick, I think, would be more work, oddly enough.
Mm. Yeah, yeah.
For me, absolutely. Anyway.
Yeah, I can understand. Yeah. Bigger sticks definitely give more back, don't they?
Yeah, and just the volume I can get out of them too. Mm. And you can just really abuse them that little bit more.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially doing big rim shots, you know.
Yeah.
Like I'd just kill through the smaller sticks.
Yeah.
Well, they just get destroyed.
From what it seems like, again, I've never seen you play in person, which is a shame, but it looks like you're smacking the shit out of them. So, and it's out, you can tell by the sound that you're hitting hard. You know, there's a real.
Right. Yeah.
This is the thing with microphones too, is that you can tell when someone's hitting hard versus triggers or, you know, sound replacement is.
Yeah, definitely.
They could be tapping and it's making the same sound. So,
yeah, absolutely.
But you can tell with microphones when someone's actually hitting, can't you? So.
Yeah, you can. And I think the sticks really play a big play in the actual sound you get from the drum too.
Mm, absolutely, yeah.
And
cymbals.
Absolutely, yeah. And, you know, your nylon tips and your wood tips and they all make a different sound. But just the sound I like in most of the bands I play in, just, yeah, really big sticks.
Yeah, yeah, that chunky chunk sound.
The big old tree trunk coming down.
Exactly. Right, okay, so, I mean, this one's always a tough one because I don't think there's any right or wrong, but triggers or mics?
Oh, jeez, again, we're coming back. In the last 10 years, I'm really coming back to the microphone.
Kind of answered the question, just answered the question, didn't we, with that last bit about blending the mic, yeah.
And it's one thing, a weak point of mine is really refining my microphone sound acoustically, something I'm really working on. So I've got a long way to go in that because the first 8 years of my playing, I barely used mics.
Yeah.
Like a lot of metal guys, you know, I barely used them. I practiced with Trigger.
Yeah.
I played live with just Trigger.
Recorded
with just Trigger or kick pad with no, I've done a couple of records with no bass drums at all. All about, especially the metal stuff I do now, I'm all about that, getting that blend. Because a lot of the stuff, I can hit pretty hard up to about 210, 215.
Yeah.
Like I can hit to a level where it's like audible, you know, in a mix.
You can hear it. Yeah.
It could work. Yeah. It really could work. So I do like that blend, but I'm really leaning toward the microphone.
I respect that. I respect that. Mike's all the way, man. I mean, again, I've got, I have absolutely nothing against triggers. I think triggers, as I've said before on this podcast,
great
as well.
Tool. Like,
they absolutely have a time and a place, and I think they're necessary 100% in a lot of 100%. Places. But there's something about just a nice acoustic bass drum, just that.
Oh, dude, all about it,
and playing it too, like the feel of it, and love it.
Yeah, I think we're all going to end up in like ACD cover bands when we're 60, dude.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And it's like, if anyone says the word trigger, we're just going to like beat on him, you know, like, get out of here, you stupid kid.
You don't know the half of it. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, you don't know what I went through.
In my day.
Yeah, the e-kits were snapping off. Yeah. No one had a replacement. The bass player was setting off the D drum trigger, the red ones.
Whenever I rim shotted, the trigger was going off as well.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't
Someone
know.
Spilled
you
beer
don't
on know. My DM5.
Wow, DM5.
These things have all happened.
Hell. I haven't
the reggae sample. What sample
yeah,
did you use?
Yeah, dude. I think it was reggae or
Beach Ball.
Fusion. It was the Fusion sample.
Oh yeah, Fusion was good too.
Yeah.
See, I didn't like to use speed metal because everyone used it.
Everyone used it. Yeah. Exactly.
And I'm like, nah, not one of those guys. I'm a fucking reggae and beach ball dude. You should add that in one of your questions at the end of your podcast, too.
Yeah. What DM5 sample?
What
is your
DM5
favorite?
Sample are you? That's gold. You can probably only have people who are 30 plus, though.
I was going to say, 30 plus and very specific
28 maybe.
Extreme metal drummers that have played with, super stupid tempos.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Cool. So, last thing. Top three. And obviously, I do top three, each different top three every week. Top three favorite Neo songs to play live.
Oof.
It's going to take a minute.
Shit. Number one. Oh, we'll start with three, I guess.
Three. Is this rank order or just three that you like?
It's hard to say. I'll just give three. I'll give one off each album. So one off the most recent album, probably Urn in Full. It's like a 14-minute track. It's got a lot of everything,
casual.
Bit of groove,
casual.
Bit of lots of blast beats, lots of double bass, lots of double bass.
Surprising.
Yeah. The second album would be Devour Me, Colossus.
Okay.
Another 12-minute track, another ripper.
Yeah.
And off the first album, it would be the single And Plague, Flowers of Kaleidoscope.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Cool.
Another 13-minute track.
I was going to say, that's...
This is ridiculous.
I mean, again, no wonder that you play for 93 minutes or whatever.
Oh, well, that's part of it too. And I mean, you can imagine doing support tours with you got 25 minutes. It's like, okay,
two
tracks.
Songs.
And sometimes we have to negotiate. Like, if you give us an extra 2 minutes, we can squeeze a third track. We can arrange our set list, you know.
Yeah, if there's no problems in changeover or
Gee, that's a whole other,
Oh, man, that's sick. No, that's wicked, man. And that's that's all I got. But that was
awesome.
That was fucking great fun. Thank you so
much.
I
had a lot of fun. My cheeks are sore. We must have laughed heaps, dude.
I know. Anyway, man. Thank you so much for doing this. That was really good fun.
Oh, dude, I'm honestly honored that you'd even asked me. I mean, because I listen to this every week and everyone else on this podcast is like an absolute legend. So I'm like really honored to be asked, man.
Thank you. Well, you can listen to yourself this coming week now if you want
to. I'm not sure I will, but I'm sure I'll get lots of haters going, fuck you, man, I play this and you shouldn't be hating on triggers. Whatever, dude.
Exactly. The hate cast, dude. I'll do
the hate cast, yes.
Hate cast,
so
funny. Maybe I'll start a second a parallel podcast called the Hate Cast where I just talk
and
shit.
And you can only do it through phones, how Alan and Adrian did it.
Yeah, exactly. And I can't use my microphone either, so it's just terrible audio, just talking shit about people.
Yeah. Did you see that guy's YouTube comment, man? Screw him.
I got to call people out too. Call people out on. Drummers we don't like and whatever.
Yeah, we could really hurt some people. Yeah, including me. It'd be funny.
Yeah, and me. I was going to say we'll have to hurt ourselves in those in that.
I have no issue ripping on myself.
Yeah, same.
Yeah, no issue at all.
But no, man. Thank you so much, and I'll let you go and get some sleep or whatever you need to do now. And thank you so much, and I'll keep in touch. I'll let you know when it's all going up. And thank you again, dude.
Yeah, cheers, mate. Cheers. Been great.
And speak again soon. Rad.
Absolutely. Have a
thank
good one,
you, man. Yeah, you
cheers,
too.
Mate.
Speak soon. Bye.